All right, good evening, my friends, and a good moed as well. We are on Hey Ahmed Aleph. We are on 5A. It's good to see you, Lloyd, Judd, Toby. Who else? We have Jake, Gloria, Bubby, Artem, Erwin, and Arthur. Welcome, my friends. Okay, so Hey Ahmed Aleph, 5A. We actually went a significant amount down the page already, over a quarter way down, actually, almost halfway, actually. The line we're up to is Bishlama Aron Tisha. So I would venture to say it might even be the next page, the second page in the art scroll. Someone can give us a verification on that when you have a chance. But while you're finding the place, let me just give a little bit of background to where we left off. And actually, what I'm going to do is give me 1 second. Have my microphone here to say, listen to a few of the recordings. I've seen that the audio quality has been very dismal. I had a hard time listening to myself. So if you give me a second, I'm just going to plug in the audio over here.
Rabbi, what was the line you said you're starting on?
We're starting Bishlama Aron Tisha. It's a lot of lines down. I can't even count it. If you see Rashi Dibur Maschil Tashin, it's across the.
It's still 5A in the art scroll.
Oh, still? Okay. All right.
Anyone?
Can you hear me better now, guys? Just curious.
Yes.
Yeah, quality's better. Okay, good. So I brought my microphone. I realized that for these classes that are only on Zoom, I should make sure to have good quality for them at very least. Okay, here we go. So what are we reviewing? So our review is as follows. We were trying to determine, we said a sukkah has to be a minimum of 10 tefachim tall. And we said that's actually a rule in Kol HaTorah Kula in general. Now, where do we get this idea of 10 tefachim, 10 hand breadths? So we got this from the Ark of the Covenant, from the Ark itself, the Aron. And the Aron is 9 tefachim tall because it's amah v'chetzi. It's an amah and a half, which is 9 tefachim. Where do we get the 10th tefach from? From the Kapores. And the question that we're going to ask right now is, Bishlama Aron Tisha? I know that the Aron measures 9 tefachim. Dechsiv vasu Aron atzi shitim amasayim v'chetzi archo v'amav v'chetzi rachbo v'amav v'chetzi komaso. So it tells me its dimensions are in amma and a half. Ela kaporis tevach minalan. But where did I get the idea that the covering that goes on the ark measures one tefach, so that 9 plus 1 gets us to 10 tefachim? It doesn't give us that explicit dimension in the Torah. Fair enough? Okay. Where do we get that from? So let's take a look. D'tani, we're basically going to give two possible ways to derive this. One attempt, it'll take us a little bit of time to settle on it, is going to be from the Shulchan, from the Misgeres, its own little border that it had around the table. And actually, since I have the Masifta with me with the pictures in the back, instead of making us use, I'm sure, our very capable imaginations, why don't I show you a picture of it so that way we can all visualize for ourselves? All right. So here we are. Here's the Aron. Hopefully, you recognize that from Indiana Jones. I was obligated to make that joke. And if you look over here, the Aron. You'll see there's this little border going around here. That's the Misgeres. And that's going to be, we're going to posit in a moment that that's one tefach, akin to the Kapores, which will be one tefach as well. Okay. And then the other solution we're going to give in the latter half of the Gemara is that we're going to derive it from the fact that it says, Al pinei ha-Kapores, it uses the biblical language of a face. And we're going to figure out that the average measurement of a face for these purposes is a tefach. So, okay. And you're going to ask me, wait a minute. I don't think I have the biggest or the smallest head out there. clearly, and you're just looking at my my fist over here, my head's bigger than a tefach. So how do we figure that out? We'll get there. Okay, so here we go. The Tani, Rabbi Chanina, Kol HaKelim, Sha'asa Moshe, Nasdam Hen Torah, Midas Archon, Midas Rachman, Midas Komasan. So in general, whenever the Torah outlines the measurements of something in the Mishkan, it gives us the width, length, and the height. Kapores, Midas Archon, Midas Rachman, Nasna, Midas Komasan, Lo Nasna. However, when it comes to the Kapores, it only told me the length and the width. It didn't give me the height of the Kapores. So how am I supposed to figure this out? Seiloman mipachu shebet kelim. So we go to our lowest common denominator of kelim in the Mishkan. Shenemar vasisilo miskeres tefach saviv. So the miskeres, which again was that border, unless there's a more accurate term the art scroll is giving you, the border that goes around the shulchan, the table in there in the Mishkan, so that measured a tefach. Ma v'halon tefach, afkan tefach. So we can infer that by default, if we're not being given a particular measurement, we settle, and we'll see this more explicitly in just a moment, we settle on the lowest common denominator. And since we know that the miskeres measured a tefach, so too we assume the kapores, if we're not being given information, it also measured a tefach. Ah, v'nelef mikelem gufayhu. So why don't we actually learn from actual kelim in the Beis HaMikdash? Why are we, which are bigger? Why are we going to this very small miskeres? So the reason is to fast the meruba lo to fasta, to fast the mua to fasta. This is a very important concept. This is a shas concept. So if you're taking notes, you'll want to remember this idea. It's a very important principle. And in fact, in rabbinic jargon, it gets used a lot as well. So again, to fast the merubah to fast means if you try for too much, you grab for too much, you're going to wind up with nothing. If you grab for a little bit, you'll wind up with something. And Rashi elaborates on this. You know, it's similar to, I'm not sure if others mentioned this, it kind of reminds me of the negotiations for Yavne. Okay, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he's negotiating with, I believe it was Vespasian, they asked him, well, if you're good at negotiating, why didn't you ask him to spare Jerusalem? Why did you only ask him to spare Yavne for the sages and everyone to flee to? So he said, you know, if I asked for Yerushalayim, he would say, no, I'd wind up with nothing. So let me compromise and ask for Yavne. So it's a similar idea that when we don't have an indication one way or the other, we err on the side of caution and we go for the lowest common measurement because that we're safe with. We don't want to overreach for something that we might not be entitled to. So again, that's the idea. Without an indication to go bigger, we go with the lowest common denominator, and the lowest we know of is the miskeres of the shulchan, the border of the shulchan. However,
the shulchan is really tiny.
What? You're right. So the question was, so if we're going for the lowest common denominator, we could go even smaller than the miskeres. V'neilaf mitzitz. Why don't we learn from the tzitz? We actually just came up in our actual Parsha Monday night class. I think we did this recently. So right, the tzitz is what the frontlet that the Kohen Gadol wears and says Kodesh HaShem on it. So that is just let me see if I have a photo in here just again so that we're not having to use our imaginations. Right here. Right, this is the tzitz. That's what the Kohen Gadol wears on his forehead. Okay? I'm sure we've seen pictures of it in the past, but there you go. So why not from the tzitz? The Tanya, tzitz domek min tes shel zahav. It's a plate of gold. Rach of beis etzbaos. Now the key detail here is that the width, it's confusing because width means height for these purposes. It's length versus width. So it took me a while. I had to read it over a few times. But the width, because the smaller measurement is going upward, right? It's a like a rectangular shape. So it only measures two finger breaths. Where do you put the S at the end of it? Finger breaths. It only measures two finger breaths, which is smaller than a tefach. Because remember, a tefach is a fist. two fingers is smaller than a fist. But now that we're citing this teaching, we're just going to finish it up. Umukav me ozen la ozen. It goes from one ear to the other. That's how far it goes. Uchasal of beishitim. One tradition teaches us that there was two lines. Yud he, the tetragrammaton. Yud ke vav ke was on the top. Namala. Kodesh lamed. And it said Kodesh with the letter lamed was milamat on the second line. Bam Rabbi Eliezer bar of Yossi ani reisi baromi. I was there in Rome and I saw it myself. Ukasava love Kodesh Lashem Meshita Achas. And there is nothing crazy going on. It said in one line, Kodesh La Hashem on it. Okay. That machlokus aside, the point being is we see clearly that tzitz is one of the things that we find prescribed for the tabernacle, for the Mishkan. And it is smaller than a tefach. So if our whole entire principle is tefasta merubah lo tefasta, that we should take the smallest measurement by default, we could go even smaller than a tefach. So why don't we do that? So one suggestion, we're going to have a little bit of ping pong over here. Dunin klimi klimi, dunin klimi tachshit. We can derive the measurement from one kli to another, but not from a tachshit, not from an ornament. The tzitz is primarily an ornament. It's not a kli, it's not a utensil. So it doesn't make sense to derive measurements from a kli, from a tachshit, from an ornament. Ah, v'nilf mi zar, damar mar, zar mashir. Now, what's the zar? You look at Rashi. Rashi tells us, shel aron o shel mizbeach o shel misgeres. That on top of the miscaris and on top of these different items in the Mishkan, they had like this little crown work, which was ornamental in nature that went around. It does not give me a specific photo to show you, but you have to take my word for it. And that is certainly smaller than a tefach. So dun and klimi klimi, dun and klimi heksher klimi. So the rule is that we derive one measurement, we can compare and contrast two utensils, but not from a heksher kli. What's a heksher kli? A heksher kli is kind of just like the extra stuff that you're putting on top of it. You know where else we've seen the term heksher? Just, I know a number of you were with us back in the Makos days, so here's a little bit of a throwback. Remember we talked about a mitzvah versus a heksher mitzvah? So there's a mitzvah, for instance. Oh, here's a good example. I have a mitzvah to eat matzah. I don't have a mitzvah to bake matzah. Baking matzah is a heksher mitzvah. It's a means to getting to the mitzvah of eating matzah. The reason you and I can just order matzahs and don't have to bake them is because there's no inherent mitzvah to eat matzah. There's only, no inherent mitzvah to bake matzah. There's inherent mitzvah, though, to eat the matzah. This came up in Makos when we're talking about sukkah. There's a mitzvah of yeshiva sukkah that one should dwell in their sukkah. But they're, right? Actually, it connects beautifully because we're in Masech HaSukkah right now. But there isn't a mitzvah to chop wood for building the sukkah. So remember, we learned way back in Makos, we learned that if someone commits what we termed, the lawyers told me, negligent homicide. Someone kills Beshogig and accidentally kills someone. He's a woodchucker, not woodchucker, what do you call it? Lumberjack out in the forest and accidentally kills someone with the axe or with the wood, depending how you learn it, as he's chopping wood. So we said the reason that you are held liable is because you are doing what is called a dvar reshus. It is something voluntary. However, if you're doing a dvar mitzvah, such as the executioner in Beis Din, the shliach Beis Din, then you do not have to go to galus if you accidentally kill someone while you're performing a mitzvah. And in that gemara, we mentioned that so the question is, well, maybe the case in the Torah is you're chopping wood to build the sukkah, and that's a mitzvah. And we said, no, chopping wood is a heksher mitzvah. It's a means to an end of having a sukkah that you can dwell in. But the chopping of the wood itself is too many steps removed. Same kind of idea over here. There's a heksher kli. There's what is inherently the utensil. And then there's kind of like the fancy ornamental things that you put on top of it. So that's called the heksher kli. So just same kind of language being used over here. Again, it's heksher and tumah. It comes up everywhere. Okay, I thought tie that in because we're in Maseches Sukkah anyway, right, guys? All right. Now, I got so taken by all this that I have to find the place again. That's what he said. So ihachi miskeres nami hechsherklihu. Well, when you think about it, isn't the miskeres? Isn't that border around the table also not inherently part of the structure? Meaning, wouldn't the shulchan itself be able to stand without the miskeres going around it? So the answer is, it depends. Miskartu lamato haisa. So if you understand that the miskeres was actually had a functional purpose in the shulchan, it held up the table itself. So then it makes sense. It's not just a hechsher kli, it's an intrinsic part of the structure. The whole table would fall apart without it. Well, the issue is, hanich lamadomer miskartu lamato haisa, lamadomer miskartu lamalo haisa, ma'ika lamemar, my hechsher klihu. There are some who understand that actually the miskeres just went, there was a table, and then we put the miskeres on top of the table, and it was purely ornamental. And just again, so it's easy to visualize, this would be kind of showing what it would look like with the table going on top of the miskeres. So if you see the photo, hopefully it helps. If you don't see it so well, you'll just you'll take my word for it, okay? Take the Gemara's word for it. So what's the answer finally? Why are we able to derive from the miskeres of the shulchan itself? Eladonin davar shanasna botora mida midavar shanasna botora mida. By hechiku tzitz v'zar shalonasna botora mida klal. What's the issue with the tzitz? Where do we learn the measurement of the width of the tzitz? We learned it from a brisa. We learned it from a rabbinic tradition. We don't actually know it from the Torah explicitly. And likewise, the same thing for the Tzar as well. We have a tradition. We said, Amar Mar, Tzar Mashahu. It's a little bit. But if we're trying to infer a concrete measurement, we have to work with what it actually says explicitly in the Torah. And what does it say explicitly in the Torah? The smallest measurement that we have is a tefach. And so therefore, just the maskana in this part of the Gemara is that just like the miskeres of the shulchan was one tefach, we can extrapolate that the kapores, the covering that went on top of the ark, was also one tefach. And how does that help us again? Because we know the Aron is 9 tefachim on its own, plus the kapores, which is one tefach, that gets us to 10 tefachim. So we can know that the minimum measurement of a mechitza, of a sukkah, and in general, is 10 tefachim. So that is the conclusion in this section of the Gemara. We're going to give an alternative way of how we figure this out, but let me just pause here and make sure we're clear on this, that we don't have anything leaving us confused before we go forward. Any questions? Okay. I said there's a little bit of ping pong. Oh, is that Uncle Heshy over there?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good to see you. Okay.
Hi, Moshe.
Oh, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good to see you. All right. Our goal, if you remember, was to figure out how do we know that the kapores equals one tefach. So far, we have one suggestion. We learned from the miskeres of the shulchan, from the border going around the table. Here is another way we could figure it out without having to resort to making this whole entire inference of tefas murbalu tefasta from the shulchan. Here we go. Here's a completely separate suggestion, seemingly not mutually exclusive. Rav Huna Amar Mehacha, Al Penei Hakaporis Kedma, Ve'ein Panim Pachos Mitefach. It uses the language when it talks about pouring. It's pouring on the Penei Hakaporis, the face of the Kaporis. And what do we know? The Torah is very deliberate about using the language, the face of the Kaporis, Ve'ein Panim Pachos Mitefach. And we know, in general, that there's no such thing as having a face that is smaller than a tefach, okay? That is a general rule. Ah, but whose face are we talking about? Ve'ema, turning to the next Amun, Ve'ema, ka'api debar yochanim. Raji tells us this is an of gadol, huma'od. This is a huge, very huge bird. I'm not sure exactly what kind of bird it is. Maybe an art scroll, they tell you what kind of bird it is, but it's a huge bird that has a face that I guess is bigger than what we have. So maybe that's the kind of face the Torah is referring to. Ah, so we bring back our very important principle, tefasta merlo, tefasta, tefasta mua, tefasta. We, again, resort to the smallest common denominator. Okay, well, if you want to go small, I could go even smaller than a tepach. Ve'ema ka'api tzipresa tzutar tuva. I'll find you a little bird with a very small, right? Think about a pigeon. A pigeon has a face that is smaller than a tefach. I'll find you a really small bird with a really small face that is smaller than a tefach. So why are we assuming that the kapores is a tefach? Because it says pene, it has a face. So Amar Avach Bar Yaakov Rafuna pene pene gamar. So where does he figure it out from? So it's actually a gezerah shava, right? Remember, guys, gezerah shavas. That's when you have two words, the same word. Sorry, same word, two different places. And what it does is it creates a wormhole between one idea in the Torah and the other idea in the Torah, and it allows us to transfer ideas back and forth, that they will share similar parameters. So, ksiv hacha al pnei hakapores. So, again, in our context, it says al pnei hakapores. Uksiv hasam says meis pnei Yitzchak aviv. So, use the language of pnei for Yitzchak. So we're not talking about a big bird from Sesame Street or small birds. We're talking about a human face. It says Pnei Yitzchak Aviv. We see that a face in the Torah refers to a human face. Oh, but is that true? V'neilaf mipanim shel malad v'ksiv kiros Pnei Elokim v'tirtzani. So we see that Pnei could also refer to the face of an angel, which would definitely confuse things in terms of measurements. So again, tefasta merlo, tefasta, tefasta mua, tefasta. We go, again, with the smallest common denominator we are aware of, and that still would be a tefach for a human. And how do we, but then we ask, v'neilaf mikruv, dechsiv al kaporis yu pnei hakruvim. Why not infer from the kruvim? From the, remember the two angels that are on top of the aron? They have faces also. And those are smaller faces. So Rav Achbar Yaakov, Gemiri ein pnei kruvim pechusin mitefach. Rafuna nami mehakakamir. How do we know this? We have a tradition that the faces of the kruvim that were on top of the aron, on top of the ark, their faces were not smaller than a tefach. Okay. So ultimately, end of the day, we have a gezeirah shava. Of a face to a face, we know that the face of the kruvim were at least a tefach, so we know that the kapores is at least a tefach as well. And now, just to wrap up, the Gemara parenthetically wants to know a little bit more about the kruvim. So you can think of this as a parenthetical. My kruv, what is a kruv? A ravavo karavya, shekei bavavo korla nu karavya, like a child. The kruvim were two in the faces of children. Amrali Abaye, I believe it's from Yecheskel coming up. Yeah, from Yecheskel. El Me'ata D'Chsiv Pnei Achad Pnei HaKruv Pnei Hashem Pnei Adam. When he's describing that creature with the multiple faces, so one had the face of a man, one had the face of a kruv. Hainu kruv, hainu adam. But if you're telling me it's a child, what's the difference between a kruv and a man? They're both human beings. So if you api ravrve v'api zutrai. One has a big face, one has a small face, one has a face the size of a tefach, one has the size of a regular human being. So again, in the end of the day, we have determined, my friends, that indeed the kapores was one tefach, whether we learn from the skeret of the shulchan, whether we determine it from the kruv, we know that's a fact. So the kapores is one tefach, plus the aron that's 9 tefachim, that gets us to 10 tefachim. That's when we know a sukkah is indeed 10 tefachim. Very good. Any questions? All right. Shkayach, everyone. Thank you for adjusting your schedules. And we'll pack in some more lumdus, God willing, next time. I have an interesting chashuki chemed that I'll just, you know, I'll share the question with you, and then we'll answer, God willing, beginning of next time. Rav Zilberstein asks in Chashukei Chemed, this is kind of going back to the previous sugya. So we learn that kind of anything, the schach has very strict parameters in a sukkah. But in theory, anything can form a wall. A human being can help form the wall of a sukkah. So the question is, what if you have a breach in your wall on Shabbos or Yontif, and you want to a human being to stand in there and bridge the gap? Would that be an isser of creating a mechitza on Shabbos and Yontif? And then there's a question, what if someone else wants to take his place? You know, he needs a bathroom break or something. And there's a question, if he's in the wall, can he also eat? Is he considered inside the sukkah that he can eat? So those are a few questions I'm just going to raise. You can think about it. And then, God willing, at the beginning of next year, we'll provide an answer to that. Sound good?
Sounds kosher.
What was that?
I said, sounds kosher.
Yeah, well, we'll find out if it's kosher. All right. Wishing everyone a good moed.
Actually, I have one question, though. After
a chag kosher v'sameach for the last days of Yontif.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, good to see Uncle Hashi and the whole family.
Same, likewise. Well, could you just sum it up again? So you're saying you're learning out from the Kruvim?
That's the second limud. The first limud is from the Miskeres of the Shulchan.
But you're trying to learn out 10 Tvachim altogether?
Yes, we know already, the Aron already says in Torah explicitly it's an Am and a half, which is 9 Tefach. Right. So we just need to figure out that the Kaporis is 1 Tefach. So we had two possibilities, either Miskeres from the Shulchan or from Gzer Shava of Punim, of the face, and we learn from the face of the Kruv.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. There's a summary. All right, Shabbat, everyone. A good Moed. Good seeing you.
Good Moed.